Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, December 8th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link or the words Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your App Store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they do, and their relationships. It also has a tendency to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those that you would like to share with us, please give us a call. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. That's 563-999-3581. When you call that number, if you press 1, it will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number. And I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. Alternatively, you might choose to send us an email. If you choose to do that, my email is tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. If you choose to do that, when we get your email, we will address your comments or questions or answers or testimonials on the Internet show. And then we will, as time allows, send you a notice about when, what day and time your email is addressed, and so you can listen back to the archives which is just another wonderful resource that Michael and Jeannie pay to make available to you. The archives of this show, which go back almost 12 years now. And when you get that notice, if you choose to, you can go back and listen to the archive and hear the comments or the feedback on your email. We also do support groups. We do a support group on Tuesday night and Thursday night from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And we invite people to join us for that, whether you want to join us yourself or maybe you know somebody that could benefit from that. They're absolutely free. People can donate if they want to, but we've never turned people away for want of money. And all the information they would need or you would need to join us for that is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. There is a separate page for the login information for Tuesday and a separate page for Thursday. So if you choose to pass that information along to somebody, please remember to let them know that each day has its separate login information. We have a group coming up tonight. We also have a group member in one of those groups who could use your thoughts and prayers as she's in the middle of having a brain surgery this morning. And the last word was that it's not cancerous, but it is pushing aside other parts of the brain that need to function, so she's having it removed today. And thoughts and prayers for her family and herself are welcome. And other than that, we have plenty of time to talk today. Yesterday when we were finishing up the show, I finished the reading through of the first read-through of Lesson 31. And Lesson 31 has some pretty bold and dramatic challenges in it for anybody who's working with these tools. And the invitation or the challenge is to begin to examine quite honestly, perhaps at a whole new level of honesty in your life, begin to understand what it is that you've come to value, what it is that you place a high priority on in your thoughts, in your possessions, in your understandings, your beliefs about life, and as always with this work, the invitation is to choose to value love and the energy of creation above all else, to choose to value what they call right thinking. To choose to value what this work says in many different ways, the truth that is true always, which is that you have never been able to separate yourself from your Creator. No matter how you try, no matter how you think they're better than me or they're worse than me, or we remain infinitely, inextricably connected to everyone else. One of the ways it says it in this work is we remain as we were created to be. And no amount of conditioning by the culture or training in our language of separation changes that truth. We get to create our experience, and we can create a dream of separation or an experience of being separated from other people and things, but it doesn't change the actuality that we were only, always, and forever created as part of this flow of life. And we remain part of the flow of life. We remain equal participants in the creation that's unfolding. And as such, if you get a hold of work like this and you become aware that what you're creating is something you'd prefer not to be experiencing, now you have the awareness of how you can go within your own thought process, within your own physical, mental, emotional energy system, and change what you value. Change what you're pouring your mind energy into. And change it sufficiently so that you have a different experience of your own life. Everything that happens, all the events on the outside are neutral. This is one of the titles. I think it's lesson 9 in this work. All events are neutral. And, of course, there are all kinds of people that want to argue against that. And when people want to argue with me about that, I say, okay. Because they're wanting to argue with me about that, they're wanting to be right. It's just a neutral event. Unless I pour my mind energy into a thought that says this is bad or wrong and they shouldn't challenge me because I've read the Way of Mastery and I know the truth. And if I pour my mind energy into that, when someone says, well, that's wrong, I can generate a tremendous amount of upset. Judgment, tension, negativity, even anger and rage. And in this work, we are called to observe very, very clearly that when I do that, it is not being caused by anything outside of me. It's simply a result of what I'm choosing to value in terms of thoughts, what I'm choosing to pour my mind energy into in terms of thoughts or interpretations. That's the mechanism that creates my emotional response, my experience of life. Nothing else. Now, of course, most people raised in a Western culture will hear that and think that's just hogwash. That's just hooey. That can't be true because I was taught the opposite of that. I was taught that this is right and that is wrong and this should be done this way and not that way, and if somebody does it differently than I want them to, that they're wrong and they should be punished, or I have a right to sue them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or attack them verbally or emotionally or physically. And the concept that I'm the one creating my experience of life by how I choose and where I choose to focus my mind energy and my attention, that is absolutely new to most people, and it's anathema. It's the opposite of, it's in direct opposition to what most people have been taught and how most people have learned to navigate the world through blame, through the victim interpretation or the victim filter. And that's still an option. It's absolutely possible in any moment, even after I've read all this work and said that I understand and that I believe this and that, the next moment I could choose a filter that says, someone has wronged me. And I have a right to attack them or punish them. Or I better run away from them. I can't stay here. I have to put distance between myself and them in order to be safe. I'm free to create that experience through that interpretation each moment. And there isn't any labeling here that says this is right, that is wrong. I just flashed on an interaction, and I talked about this on the show maybe within the past couple weeks, that we had somebody in the support group that was really, really struggling with trying to figure things out. in this mental-emotional way. And it dawned on me, because I knew something about his history, it dawned on me that he might be trying to practice two contradictory approaches at the same time. And I asked him, and he said, well, I'm not really doing that full force, but yes, I'm still doing that work. And I said, okay, well, you might want to, you know, pay attention to the fact that these two approaches are diametrically opposed. One says control everything, and the other one says you don't know anything. You have divine ignorance. You just keep asking to be shown, and you don't judge this as bad or that as good. And as soon as I was done talking, he said, oh, so you're saying that your way is better, or the way of mastery is right. And I said, that's not what I'm saying, because the way of mastery continually reminds us that every time we judge, good, bad, right, wrong, it doesn't matter. Every time we judge, we put our bodies into a state of disrepair. We create upset. We create tension. It literally says, this is the very cells in the body cease to function properly when you judge, judging anything or anyone. The point I was trying to make is not that one way is better or worse. The point I was trying to make is that these two ways have you doing directly opposite things. And if you try and do both of them at the same time, you're probably just going to stymie yourself. You're going to get frustrated to no end. And, you know, there's an old saying that, you know, all roads lead to Rome. There's another saying that says, you know, there are many paths to the summit of a mountain. You don't have to take, it's not just one way to get to the top. There's not just one thing that you can do to feel enlightened moment to moment. One of the ways the Way of Mastery has been talking about in the last few lessons is that my path to unloading my backpack full of excuses and guilt and reasons for judging, my unique path to get to this point and my path to unload that backpack is going to be specific to me. And I can't know what it's going to take, and nobody else can know what it's going to take. The invitation is to be willing to keep doing a variety of different things that change over time until I get the results that I prefer. So, what are your thoughts on this? 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. Or we may go back and start rereading Lesson 31, which was longer than the last few. Took us a few days to get through it. And the title of Lesson 31 is Placing Your Trust and Loyalty in Love, in the Energy of Creation. And as part of this chapter, as we start reading, you're going to hear an invitation to get really, really honest about what you've been placing your loyalty and your trust in, if it's not love. Area code 541, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Celinda, good morning.
Welcome.
And how are you this fine Illinois morning?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
So are we. We're doing
good.
Well, thank you. I'm calling because I had a very strange dream last night, and I believe I understand what it means for me, and I thought I would share it.
Okay.
I dreamt that I was visiting a couple who had a baby. And I suddenly noticed that the babies, you know, we were talking and they were just sort of ignoring the baby, and they said it had some problems, and I said, yes, I see it has some health problems, and they went on talking and kind of ignoring the baby, and I took a closer look, and the baby's skin had come off its body, and it was just flesh underneath, shiny flesh. And I said, there's something really wrong with this baby. Do you think you need to take it to the doctor or something? And they said, oh, no, it's fine. It's just not feeling very well. So I'm talking with them, and I'm watching the baby with one eye, and I realize that the baby is dying. And I said, oh, this sounds like a horrible dream, but I wanted to share it because it was very significant. And I said, the baby is dying, and they just went on talking, and then the baby just expired right there. Its skin was totally off, the flesh was showing, and blood was coming out of it. And that's when I woke up. And so I thought I'd share that with you. Especially in light of that little Ho'oponopono, the Hawaiian ritual for forgiveness book I told you about one session, and how it defined the parent, the mother, the father, and the child, sort of gave a little metaphor for them. And I realized that the mother and the father were just ignoring the baby. And they were carrying on their conversation. I don't even know if it was an enjoyable conversation or a hostile conversation or anything. They were just carrying on whatever they were doing. And I realized that that was a metaphor for me. And especially sort of like the one in Ho'oponopono, that the mother, whom I consider the sacred breath, that elemental feminine energy that guides us and nurtures us and supports us. And the father, I understood as the father image, that Christ mind, if you like, only this is soul disconnected from the father and the mother, disconnected from its source. And so the child is literally bleeding to death. It's losing its life energy. And I realized that was a metaphor for me, and that really I have only one choice, to either be in love or be in fear. And so it was very, even though it was a grisly dream, it was very, very uplifting for me. It's like my choice, my freedom, is getting clearer and clearer, and that it is now time at my age for sure, or any age, to come up to the plate and play the game the way Creator created it. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, I'm glad you were able to spin it to a positive. It's still somewhat eluding me how you're making that connection, but as long as you've turned it into a positive and a positive choice in your life, that's a good use of dream work, I would say.
One little detail that I forgot to tell you is that the baby, when it was dying, was a cat. It was no longer a human little human baby. And so the other metaphor I took from that is the ego self, which is a self based in fear, the animal self. And that was going to die. If I keep choosing for freedom, the grip on fear has on me has to be loosened, and I'm the only one who can loosen it with the help of the sacred breath, Mama Spirit.
Well, that would certainly be in line with these teachings.
Yeah, that I'm sorry, I forgot that crucial detail, but it was very clear to me. that
that the animal nature was dying off.
Right, I hope so. And really, not that I diss my body. I have a great respect for the form, but maybe it's the disidentification with it, so that I can, for the first time, feel joy and peace abiding in me, rather than just fleeting moments of them. Yeah. Sounds like a good voyage, doesn't it?
It certainly could be.
Well, thank you so much.
Of course, you know, most of this is, most of these teachings are just about, let's stay present in the moment and wake up to what we're doing. I was just about to read in this lesson 31 to review it, is to say, I was just starting to talk about the places in the lesson where they ask us to evaluate really deeply, honestly. What are we pouring our mind energy into? What are we valuing? What are we holding on to? And are we going to be loyal to love? Are we going to trust love? Or are we going to be loyal to or trust something else? Am I going to trust my fear mind as it tells me, run away, this is dangerous, you shouldn't be here, you're a failure, you'll never amount to anything, all of those negative thoughts? Or is it going to, am I going to trust other deep spiritual teachings and the miracle of life expressing in me? Like in any moment, I can stop and turn the focus inside and realize, hey, you know what? Something is making my heart beat. Something is making my food digest. Something's keeping my breath moving even when I'm not thinking about it. Let me put my loyalty and trust in that flow of life rather than all the negative thoughts about this, that, and the other thing that my culture and my language and my family and my traumas have conditioned me to focus on.
And it's amazing how unaware and unavailable I am to even observe my body and what it's doing in the moment. And how much of my structural stance takes on all of the habitual negativity that I've ever lived through or in or with. And it's all expressing in my body. And if I would, be willing to just observe rather than to be so fascinated with the baubles of my thinking mind, of which I'm not even aware, it could be an amazing adventure.
I would have to agree.
Also, I like the word commitment because it, for me, loyalty is a commitment, and I enjoy that that sense of trusting enough to be committed. Courage, commitment, and confidence kind of all cluster together. And I just thought I'd share that too.
All right. Well, I've mentioned recently that I was reading or listening to the book The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, and near the end of that book they talk about, instead of commitment, recommitment, because it doesn't matter what you commit to, life is going to come along and you're going to fall off the wagon from time to time, or you're going to drop a commitment, and it's the art, the practice, the skill of recognizing when you've deviated from what you said you wanted and recommitting, getting back on the track that is useful or that you observe is useful. And
thank you for that.
Well, it's a brief way to talk about what I've had several discussions with on this internet show about people who make a commitment and then they don't live up to the commitment and then they beat themselves up mercilessly. And, you know, it's been my observation that the beating myself up is never productive. It's not a way to a good way to motivate myself to do something. And I prefer the Sylvia Boorstein method of my hand over my heart space and get talking very gently to myself and say, "Timmy, sweetheart, you're in pain." That's part of what, you know, has led to you to drop the commitment here or to go against what you said you wanted. So breathe, soften, then we'll look at what's going on. Then we'll decide what to do. But for now, you're in pain. And when you're already in pain, it's not going to be useful to beat yourself up and say, "Oh, you're such an idiot," and, "Oh, I screwed this up," and, "Oh, this person will never trust me again," etc. So be gentle with yourself. And then, from that perspective, from restoring that perspective of peace and calm, my field of vision gets broader and wider and clearer, and I see many things differently. And now I can start to evaluate what's going on here. You know, this is not the first commitment that I've dropped the ball on recently. So what's happening? And I can evaluate. Am I making commitments that aren't really in alignment with my values and priorities and my stated goals in life? Am I making commitments for the wrong reason, because I want so-and-so to like me or think that I'm better than they are? Am I making commitments out of fear about what will happen if I don't? You know, did I make a commitment to something that's really not in alignment with my, what Michael Rice would call my primary and secondary purpose? Gay Hendricks is talking in his book about living from your zone of genius. And at one point later on in the book, he talks about how he got an offer for, you know, like $50,000 to give an endorsement for some of these mind-body energy tools, some kind of a tech thing that was going to help people become aware of their mind-body energy system or whatever. And he looked at it and he said, "Well, it sounds really solid, and of course I might talk a lot about mind-body stuff." And he went to his wife and he said, "So what do you think? I'll get, you know, $50,000 just for signing this and letting them use my name for this, and plus, you know, whatever, benefits." And he said, "What do you think?" And she fed his words back to him. "Is doing this in your zone of genius?" And he just burst out laughing, because no, it's not. And if it's not in his zone of genius, that's what his words are for what Michael Rice talks about, in alignment with his primary and secondary purpose, then he just doesn't do it, because he doesn't want to derail himself from being in his zone of genius or from pursuing his primary and secondary purpose. And he doesn't have to beat himself up about, "Well, I said I would, and now I'm backing out." And if he recognizes that this activity is not in alignment with his values and his priorities and his zone of genius, etc., then he doesn't need to feel bad about changing his mind or what some would call breaking the commitment. There may be consequences, okay, and deal with the consequences. But the consequences will be easier to deal with when I begin to act from my awareness of my true nature and in alignment with my values and priorities. And if you're in Michael Rice's work and you've done your secondary purpose outline in something that's in alignment with your primary and secondary purpose, or if you've done Gay Hendricks' work, you've outlined what your zone of genius is and you realize what it takes for you to stay in that area. And all of that can be done, and you can learn about yourself and you can make course corrections without the negativity. There's no need to generate all the negative emotions. Go ahead.
And I really appreciate all of the sources that are showing me that unless I give it to myself first, I don't experience it. If I don't experience it, I can't share it. and then gift it to others.
Well, it's really lovely that a lot of this stuff is getting out there, and it's getting out there in different ways. And I had a patient yesterday tell me that they watched the Netflix documentary, Stutz, S-T-U-T-Z. And it's a documentary made by a young actor / comedian, Jonah Hill. And he decided to do a documentary because he wanted to introduce the world to his therapist. Because he thought the things he was learning in therapy were so useful, so life transformational in a positive way, that's what motivated him to do the documentary. And this patient of mine said, I just thought of you through this whole thing, and, you know, you're my Stutz, and you should look at this, and so evaluate it. And several of the things, I'm only like the first 45 or 50 minutes through the hour and a half documentary, and already several of the things, everything he says is compatible with the work that we're teaching here and that I do in my practice. And he stepped this 33-year-old actor, he stepped him through a practice which is essentially Pierre Pradervan's Gentle Art of Blessing right there in a session. And so, you know, there's a lot of good overlap and a lot of good exposure to the awareness that I'm creating my experience of life by how I choose to interpret and respond to this flow of energy we call life.
And in light of the In the Presence of the Light poem from Siberia that I read on the show one day, for me, all of those different perspectives are little mirrors reflecting their little flame, their little candle back into the darkness of the world. And to embrace each of those pathways is delightful. Even though it's not my pathway, to allow it and to share our commonalities is a true, for me, regeneration of my human spirit.
That would be good. We want to do that. You want to regenerate that spirit, get in touch with it, and feed it and nurture it. There were several things already in the first 50 minutes of this documentary where what the therapist is saying is basically a reframing or a restatement of something that's in the 10 bottom line observations. And so it's very compatible work. He has different words for it. He likes to draw little pictures and diagrams. But it is real solid stuff about how there's, you know, a representation of myself at a younger age that lives inside of me that still feels like it's 8 or 14 or 20 years old. And there might be woundedness there, and there might be negative thoughts about self in that mindset. And that mindset doesn't need comfort, doesn't need affirmation or reassurance from people outside of me. It needs it from me. There's all kinds of layers of good stuff that's getting out there. These core tools, it's not just available on Mind Shifters Radio. It's not just available through Guy Finley. It's not just available through Gangaji and Ho'oponopono, and it's available in a lot of places, and it's coming out. And so if people want to find it, it's there. And again, this is the issue. It's okay if they don't want to do it. You know, we've had people call this radio show over the years, and they just want to argue for how it isn't useful to think all events are neutral. And it's not useful for me to just choose love in every situation. I need to get angry, and I need to, you know, get my marching boots on, and I need to go do this and that, and I better hurry up. It's okay if they want to take that approach. It's also okay if you want to choose for love, if you want to place your trust and your loyalty in love, as Lesson 31 calls us to do. So, other comments, other questions, other answers for us before we keep reading Lesson 31, or is there something else you'd like to direct us to?
Yes. In light of what you've just said about all the many different paths to Rome during our conversation and before, there is a wonderful their last names because they're Russian, but the name of the books that they wrote is The Art of Soaring and the Power of Luck, and their definition of the power of luck is taken from the Russian, which is taken from the Latin, and base words of ray or light. And so it's delightful. There are two therapists in Russian, and they have dipped into the indigenous shamanism to come up with what they call magic, which simply is magical play. It's not white magic where you're trying to change someone else. It's just magical play. And they have the first section explaining what all these peculiarities of the Russian persona is, character is, and why Russians like the Irish, I would think, love magic and humor above all else. And so I just share that. The Art of Soaring, you probably can find them on Abe Books, is the first book, and The Power of Luck is the second book. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun to read. I mean, you're laughing and seeing how they are just doing these little practices that allow them to accept life as it is, to have confidence in the divine plan. It's just going the way it is supposed to, and to get themselves out of the way so they can observe all of the wonderful gifts, or what they call signs, around them. And so I thought I'd share that.
All right. Thank you.
And thank you. And I am complete.
All right. Well, thanks for your comments. I'll mute you so you can listen in. And we'll ask if anybody else has a question or a comment before we go back to reading the review of Lesson 31. And what we're looking at in Lesson 31 is, and we're being called to get very clear about, what are we valuing? Where are we placing our mind energy to value this or that? So no other hands go up, so I'll return to the reading and review of Lesson 31. The text reads, "Beloved and holy friends." And I just want to call our attention to the fact that this book has pointed out several times that the writer, the inspiration for this, the people that promote this book are coming to us from the perspective of understanding that it is counterproductive to put anyone or anything up on a pedestal. And when this book says, beloved and holy friends, in several places it stops and says, if you understand what we're talking about there, you know we are equals. We are right here with you. We are no further from you than the width of a thought. And you are the author of that thought. Beloved and holy friends, as always, and though I have repeated this to you often, I say it to you again and yet again, it is with joy that I come forth to abide with you. for relationship is the holiest of all places. Now, I want to point out, this is a sidebar, I want to point out that the meaning, the definition you give the word relationship is going to be critical here to your understanding. What most of us talk about in the Western world anyway, when we use the word relationship, is we're describing or we're using that word in place of to represent this very unproductive pattern of interaction, this victim pattern of viewing things, this wounded pattern, this blaming pattern, projection communication, as Dr. Rice would talk about it, the opposite of responsibility communication. Relationship, the way most people in the Western world talk about it, is just a word that represents this very unhealthy pattern of interaction where I'm more focused on myself in an unproductive, unloving way and looking to get some peace or comfort or solace from somebody else because I feel like I'm damaged or wounded and I need somebody in my life who can distract me from my own woundedness and damage. And that's what we talk about when we use the word relationship. And this work says, let's be clear. Relationship is this joining of people who have looked within and seen they are whole and complete just as they are. Relationship is the interaction of extending love and receiving love and extending love between two people who understand that is their true nature. Relationship is a word that they're using here to talk about people who have gone into their center, seen their true nature as the essence of the creative force expressing in form, and they interact with others who also see that, who feel it for themselves. The words they use to describe that here are as follows. Relationship between any two who choose to look upon each other after having already looked within themselves and found no lack. For those two can then look out upon another and see only perfect innocence, only perfect peace, and only perfect love. Therefore, it is with joy that I join with you. For I look upon you with perfect peace and perfect love and perfect trust. My loyalty to you is unshakable. No event that occurs in the realm of your space and time can taint the loyalty which I know to the depth of truth that is your very self, and that which is unshakable, unchanging, unchangeable, and unchanged forever. For my loyalty is perfectly pure. My trust of you is unfathomable and immeasurable. So clearly, this person is not talking about, this teaching is not talking about evaluating somebody based on what they say and do. This teaching is referring right now to being able to see past the veil of perception, to see the shimmering radiance of the creative energy in, as, and through everyone and everything that is looked upon. This is not what we've been trained to think of as relationship. The text goes on and asks the question, how can this be so? And maybe your mind says, yeah, okay, I'm not that bad a person, but last week I got a little angry with my spouse, and 3 weeks ago I forgot to pay for that candy bar I picked up in the store, and I'm really a pretty horrible person. So, Yeshua, your loyalty in me is completely misplaced. And the text goes on and says, my trust in you emerges from my trust in my Creator. My trust in you emerges from the perfect knowledge that you belong only to that one that I have called Abba, that you are a part of the creative flow, just as I am, that we are inseparable, that all things, all minds are joined. The text goes on and says, my trust then is the expression of what I have come to know as I have looked into the depth of my own being, both within my physical incarnation that became rather famous, and also since then, where I have discovered the perfection of capital L love that pervades all things and can be seen beneath the surfaces. And it can be seen through the appearances that the body's eyes and the ego's thought system would show you. So this is what I was talking about earlier, to look for and see the highest and best of another person and then choose to cooperate only with that. That's the definition of humility from the ancient Aramaic. The ability to understand that the image your eyes are showing you, your brain is showing you, from the input it's creating, from the pictures it's creating, from the input of your eyes and your history, and that is not the truth of life. To be aware, and it says this earlier, that one of the most difficult things for us to do in this incarnation is to understand that what our eyes and our mind, our brain shows us is not the truth of life. To learn, to see, to feel, to intuit, to extend our energy, our knowing in different ways beyond just the five physical senses. The question is posed, so what do I mean by that? And the answer is, as you abide in your physical world, the greatest challenge that you have moment to moment and moment to moment is to be vigilant against identifying with the pictures your mind is showing you, with the perceptions which are born and birthed as a result of the physical apparatus of the body itself. That is, you think you look out through the body because this is where your attention seems to be. And the apparatus called your eyes immediately shows you a world of objects separated by space. So it's a very specifically tuned antenna, and it's missing all kinds of energies. It's like the FM antenna that you have is only picking up FM stations. It doesn't mean that there's no TV stations there, there's no AM stations there. It doesn't mean there's no X-rays there. It doesn't mean that there's no mind energy out there. It just means the FM antenna is only picking up a very small bandwidth of a particular kind of energy. The text goes on and says, if you identify with that level of perception, then you can only conclude that you are separate from one another. When you see events happening, it's absolutely impossible to see the subtle interconnection of all events. This is why in an earlier lesson, it asked us to play with extending our perception, to ask to be shown what's out here on the edge, on the periphery of my visual field. What's really going on with this person? What other subtle energies might I pick up? What other knowings can I develop about this other person and myself? But if you fall into the trap of forgetting that you live in the universe, then you only rely on the stimulation of the physical senses and you have a perception that you create that you're separate from other people. The text goes on here and says, and universe means simply one turning or one song. One event occurring, like an ocean is but one event expressing as many waves. so too do all events in the field of space and time, in the field of physical matter, all of these events merely emerge from that one unified thing, the flow of life, the flow of creative energy, the one mind, the Christ mind, etc. The text says, from the body's level of perception, the thinking mind, in association with the body, creates interpretations of what it believes it is seeing. And now your attention, your awareness, is already twice removed from what's actually happening, from reality, capital R reality. First, you become hoodwinked, thinking that what the body's eyes show you is what is truly real and significant. And then you start interpreting it. So we'll pick this up again tomorrow, reviewing lesson 31. And we'll look forward to your comments, questions, answers, testimonials. Again, I'll remind us that we have a support group happening tonight. Feel free to join us or send someone you know. All of the information you need to join us there is available on the internet on the website mindshiftersacademy.org. And please remember there's a separate login page for Thursday as opposed to Tuesday's group. And again, if you have any extra time or you know about the Gentle Art of Blessing and you want to send loving thoughts and blessings to the members of our group, one of whom is in the middle right now of brain surgery, please do send your loving thoughts and blessings, and or feel free to join us this evening. And again tomorrow, we've got another 2 hours tomorrow. And I will remind us while we're waiting for Jeannie to get on board that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. And we actually have somebody who's popped in the chat room. If I'm not mistaken, he's from Australia. Hello, Bob. So, let us know, how can we support you? What's your response to this? If you have had experience with that Netflix documentary called Stutz, we welcome comments or questions about that. And you can either email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@yagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And again, I will watch the switchboard, but I will hang up in case Michael is trying to get in and he can't. Blessings.
Hi, and welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, December the 8th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a minute to dial in. We were both a little late. So I saw Dr. Tim hang up about the time I was dialing the number. So we appreciate him and his doing the first hour. And I know sometimes he'll hang up early to give Michael a chance to get dialed in because sometimes Blog Talk won't let two people be host at the same time. It's just kind of does things that way sometimes. Anyway, welcome to the show. And as usual, I will invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org. And if you click on this, I'm opening it at the same time I'm trying to talk. Click on Start Here, and you will find that we have added two new videos that will assist you. One of them is a walkthrough of the website, and one is a walkthrough of the app. And I've heard from a whole lot of people that that has been very helpful for them. So if you haven't checked them out yet, please give them a check out. And Michael, welcome.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here. And we get to carry on the conversation. We've got a lot of conversations going on today. I just finished recording a podcast for a medical group up in Kingsport, Tennessee. Just got off the phone with that one about, or off the Zoom call with that one about 30 minutes ago. And as soon as we get a link, we'll get that on the website. We were talking about healing from a point of view of energy and the impact on the microcirculatory system of the Avacyn and its part in the its role in healing and supporting vitalizing the body. So we had about an hour and a half conversation. It was originally planned to be a 30-minute session, but we just got rocking and so kept going on that. And then we finished the show at 2 and at 3 o'clock. I've got a 20-minute interview with another physician who's wanting to do a podcast. And then at 3:30 Eastern Time, we have the Hear My Voice book club with Inca in London, England. So for those who are on London time, it'll be at 8:30 tonight. And so busy day, lots happening. And we have this awesome little girl, Ari Rain, with us, who's just one of the biggest blessings that anyone could ever have. And beyond that, we're in appreciation for the fact that that you're joining us for this conversation. There is just so much to talk about in this arena of healing, in this arena of waking up to who we are as human beings and working through the intricacies of confusion that are created by the mind that lives in denial and dissociation. It's such a, it's like the most intricate maze in existence when you realize just what the mind is doing. I was sharing with the gentleman who did the interview for the medical group up in Kingsport that my observation over the last 50 years of teaching this work is that for someone who engages the work and really truly does the work, that it takes from 5 to 10 years to begin to comprehend what we're talking about. And the reason for that is because this body-mind unit, this carbon-based memory system, this device is designed to hold the energetic patterns of the generations and pass those patterns from generation to generation, is so complex. It contains so much trickery, so much deceit, so much deception and dissociation that staying clear and connected with who we are as love, that's the only mind that can comprehend it. And so often our minds, the true mind of the human being, is covered up by this mental function or what we call the mind that's nothing more than a resonance device. You know, if I say, don't think about the color of your car, you know, the average person says, well, I'm thinking about the color of my car. Well, no, actually, you're not thinking at all. All it is resonance. There's information in your mind about the color of your car. I set up a frequency with my voice, and that fired in you, and you think you're thinking, but the truth is, when the mind is resonating content from the past, all it's doing is regurgitating its past. And to get past the regurgitations of the past is the work of the ages. And there has to be clarity and the ability to keep the true mind present through all the confusion that has befuddled 1,000 generations in each of our bloodlines. And that's what this work is really about. And the reason for continuing this conversation is because none of us, and I'm including myself in this, none of us will ever move through it without the support of community. It takes that community interaction and the continuous engagement in the tools of forgiveness to remove the errant information, the hostility, fear, and pain-based information that was never designed to be in a human system in the first place. You know, the interview that I just did, I started out with a quote that you've heard me use often here, but it you know, we can repeat this one. We could repeat it at the beginning of every show. And it comes from CIA's research on perception. You can actually go to the CIA's website and you'll find a book there that you can download free. I don't know how many millions it costs the government to make it available to you, but you can also go to our website, and since they kept moving the link around, we'd have it and the link would be broken and we'd find it and the link, so we downloaded it and put it on our website too. It's the study of human intelligence that was done by the CIA. And one of the chapters in it is a chapter on perception, where they're looking to get the clearest understanding of perception possible so that they can get the best intelligence possible from their intelligence agents. So here, quote, word for word is what they say. Perception is demonstrably an active rather than a passive process. It constructs rather than records reality. Continuously construct their own version of reality. So that's the CIA's official take. Now, when you recognize that, and, you know, I have fun saying that the CIA is now teaching A Course in Miracles, because that's perfectly in line with what A Course in Miracles says. And each time that I open, face, and heal another issue in my life, even though it may be physical or it could be mental or emotionally painful, I take one more step into vitality and the possibilities of a human life. You know, there was an ancient promise that said, to he or she that overcomes, they will not taste of the second death. They will become a pillar in the temple and shall go out no more. It's a pretty clear promise of a very, very long life. If you expect to die, there's a reason you expect to die. Because everybody in your bloodline that's over 120 is already dead, just like mine. And so we recognize we inherited a genetic structure that set kill us. It's just the way it is. Now, that's not a necessity. If you go back into the same ancient teachings, they say that with man, death began. We made the process up. We're the ones who stepped into disintegrative energies, who chose to engage in energetic patterns that did not support life. Those energetic patterns are all based in hostility or fear. So I must face and iron out every wrinkle in my mind if I'm going to clean up my generational patterns. Because the wrinkles in my mind come from my own life experience and those and tend to be patterned over the after those of the generations. So in essence, the body has no need of healing whatsoever. It's only the mind that needs to be corrected. And it can be corrected by the presence of conscious active present love. It can't be corrected when you're projecting its pain into your brain's image of something out there and thinking there's something out there that's the problem. Again, there's a whole big conversation in the culture about this satanic cult that's going to take over the world with its one world religion. The one world religion took over the world thousands of years ago. The one world religion is a religion of blame and the belief that the problem's out there. That is the one world religion. It took it over. And I don't care where you look. You can go into most churches and you'll find that's the actual religion that runs it. They don't stand in a space of being love for neighbor unless that neighbor agrees with them. And so they violate the very basic tenets of the man who said, here's how the energy system works. It works only when it's fueled by love. But having been brainwashed by the one world religion, well, yeah, but there's that, you know, that other religion that disagrees with us, those heathens. And all I have to know is that you're a heathen. You can be the best heathen in the world, but all I have to know is you're a heathen to know that you're my enemy and you deserve my wrath and it's okay for me to kill you. And on it goes. So I have to be the one who brings conscious, active, present love to interaction with what appears to be my neighbor, an Aramaic neighbor is anybody you think about, but is really a projection of my own mind, the wrinkles in my own mind. And so I have to iron out those wrinkles. And each time one forgives, applies the removal process to the toxic energy within themselves, another disease disappears from the tissue structure. And these things will tend to occur over and over and over again because they've been so reinforced throughout the generations. So it's not the body that's in need of healing, it's the mind that's in need of healing. Remember that perception and the condition of the body are flip sides of exactly the same coin. You can't separate the mind from the body. And so if you want things to be different, guess what? You have to do something different. Medicines will never make up for self-destructive habits. And so what we want to do is open the comprehension of that, the deeper comprehension, not just awareness. Some people can spout out the words. You know, Einstein says, any fool can know. The idea is to understand. And yes, there are all kinds of facts that you've been taught to believe. But remember, most of them are just projections of your own mind. Again, perception is demonstrably an active rather than a passive process. It constructs rather than records reality. People continuously construct their own version of reality. So that's what we're here to do, and we're glad that you're here to join us and be part of that process. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, there is no one in the chat room except for Bob, and we're chatting down in Australia, so there's no question.
Hey, Bob.
There. Oh, but you do have a hand just went up, and it is Miss Susan, 610. You're on
awesome.
The air.
Awesome. We haven't heard her voice in a while. Welcome, young lady.
Oh, thanks. Good, Jeannie. I was texting you frantically. I said, I did press one. You first said nobody was on. I said, wait a minute. Yeah, it's good to be in touch. Thank you, guys. Michael, you said something. You probably said this before, but it's weird how when the brain's ready to hear it, we hear it. You said something like it takes 10 years. The patterns we've gotten into are seriously challenging, and
right.
I'm finding them that way. I'm finding them that way. So just thanks for saying that. I do have a couple of questions, hard to know where to start. I've been reading Pierre Pradervan's book, A Gentle Art of Blessing, again.
Nice.
And it hit me that he is inviting people to practice the enlightened goal that is at the end of your worksheet. And
yes.
It isn't as if you already know that. It isn't as if he's saying, you should bypass all the other things. He doesn't deal with that. He just says what he did out of his own desperation. He began
right.
to bless the person that he was obsessively angry at. And
yes.
So
that his mind
thinking,
told him he was obsessively angry at. Remember that? Right. That's just a construct that the mind says, I'm angry at that. I'm only angry because I have anger in me. I've never been angry for any other reason in my life than that.
Right. Well, he was doing it, and he realized he was poisoning himself by his own thinking and decided, I don't need to go into that. It just, it was like a little light bulb went off. I thought, we've been doing that with Michael for as long as I've been on the radio show. The enlightened goal is this practice. And the practice can go on and on and on after you get your enlightened goal. So it is very helpful right now to have this little practice, because we have this fellow Michael living with us, and he has been like a walking lesson opportunity. He's very gentle soul, very easy to have around, absolutely shaves off his quirks and edges to make himself almost invisible so that he can live here. And he has had 15 years of not having a home, and he does once in a while, he tells a story about maybe living in New York in a cardboard box over a heat vent near Grand Central Station or something, having a part-time job at a very fancy resort and managing, it's a sort of indoor-outdoor resort, and managing to find a place to hide so that he can stay there all night. And then before the guards show up in the morning, manage to get outside or hide, more often hide because they have alarm systems, hide so that when the boss comes in or the guard comes in, he can sort of come around a corner and look as if he just arrived. And the stress of that, I can't begin to imagine the ongoing stress of that. But one day, just the other day, he said, you know, as I get older, and he just had a 68th birthday, as I get older, I am more and more anxious and unable to put myself in those situations. So, of course, I get into my fix-it mode, and I go, okay, maybe time for the tools, you know, and I know better than to present something, because there is so much something going on. So
resistance.
The only way, well, it isn't even, yeah, and it's sort of global. Like, little things happen, like he went to help at the refugee center weeks ago now, and they require masks there again. There's been an outbreak or something. And I gave him the church's masks that they give us free. And he said, oh, I don't like that kind of mask. I don't wear that kind of mask. And I forgot the one I have at home. And I said, Michael, if you want to stay here and help me out, and he gets paid for that, I said, you've got to wear this. And it was hard for him to accept something that didn't quite suit him. And yet I'm thinking his whole life is, to me, would be unsuitable, unbearable.
Right. I hear you.
His answer to that is, you have no idea. You can't imagine, you know, you suggest things. You don't think I have thought of those things? You can't imagine. I remember, bless you, Jeannie. I remember Jeannie texted me during one session with Michael, and she said, I'm having to breathe. I'm having to breathe. Because she was frustrated. Well, I feel as if the gentle art of blessing has absolutely saved me. The worksheets, I've done the worksheets. I've got the enlightened goal, but I have to reinstate it a lot. And it isn't because this person is difficult at all. God has given us the easiest possible cohabitant in this man. But he is a mystery to me. It's like everything I could never allow myself to be, except maybe he doesn't have a choice. I don't know exactly what I'm asking here, except if you have any thoughts about anything I've said about him so that I could get a different kind of view on this situation. And he's going to stay with us until it gets warmer, and maybe beyond that.
Right.
Perfectly happy to stay have him stay here because he does some chores that Tim used to do, and he likes not doing them.
Nice.
Like filling fancy
nothing like a little help.
I know. So, and specifically one question I could ask is just this morning he came in and he has this pained look on his face often. And I know he's probably feeling anxious. And I said, is everything okay? And he said, well, sure, yeah, it's okay. And I'm just, you know, the holidays are coming and those are hard for me. And I said, I bet. But let me tell you, we're not doing anything fancy around here. And you're welcome to any of it if that helps. And he said, that helps. And then he went downstairs. He doesn't stick around to talk. But I did notice a weird thing the other day is he got a birthday greeting from his ex-wife. And they haven't talked in about maybe 6 months, and they only have these cursory connections. She sent him a video, and she thought he'd like it. And at the end of the phone call, he said that she called him an a-hole twice. And I said, what inspired that? He said, I have no idea. She just gets mean to me. And I said, Michael, what is there anything that went on between you that would inspire her to say that? And he said, well, she sent me this video, and it was dubbed. It wasn't an original singer in there. It was dubbed, and she knows I don't like that. So I told her I don't like it. I said, well, Michael, she did send you something. That's something. And he said, I don't want anything from her. Anyway, I'm telling you, this is the kind of dialogues we have. It feels as if you say it takes 10 years once you start your tools. And I say, Michael, you've got to get to work. But this is me getting anxious. It's my own stuff. So I'm just telling you, and I'll stop talking. If you have any thoughts on any of that, I'd love it.
Well, what I hear in regard to Michael is that perhaps the place where his work will be, if he ever chooses to do it, which he may not, is in the arena of people having expectations or goals for him.
Yeah.
People having framed goals for him and him, you know, I mean, you look at this location where he goes and hides, you know, mm-hmm. The goal people have for him is to be out of there. And then he comes around the corner and looks like he's just arrived. So everything's okay. So it sounds like he's really sensitive to anybody making any demands on him.
That's a great observation. Okay.
And should he ever start to do his work, his forgiveness work will probably be in looking at what his goals are for those who have goals for him. It kind of sounds like you have to walk on eggshells around him to mm-hmm. avoid presenting him with the goal that he may go off the rails over.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you look at that statement, and if you were to check and see if that statement applied to your power person, would that apply to your power person?
I'm going to have to reword it to myself to even understand the question. My power person, if I suggested something to a power person, that would offend the power person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, did you walk on eggshells ever, you know, having them think that you were wanting something from them, requiring them to be different somehow?
I'll have to really think about that, Michael. I understand the question. It doesn't resonate right away. It may be exactly the right question.
Might be worth a few worksheets. I notice your breath isn't moving very well.
Yeah.
So chances are that one of the things, just, you know, looking at the overall conversation, chances are that one of the things that would bring out person's whatever they would aim at you was that you would ask or imply that they should somehow be different. That you wanted something from them that they weren't giving you.
That I can relate to, but I didn't even think I could ask. I went out of the household very early and invested my emotional connections in outside people. There was no chance inside. And I know it was offered sometimes, but it was too late according to my mechanisms.
Right. I hear you.
For me to turn around and accept some kind of tenderness from my mother. I'm thinking of my mother and how much I wanted her physical and emotional affection. Those weren't there. But then when I was a teenager and I got into a crisis, she was right there and I pushed her away. I wouldn't confide in her. I never, ever did, not once, even when she lived with us at the end of her life, which I've told you about. How wonderful a time we had together. And there was great love between us. But it was
But it still wasn't safe to tell the truth.
No, it wasn't. Terribly much not. How can that connect with what's going on with Michael? Wow.
Well, that's exactly what's going on with Michael. Don't make requests of me.
Say more.
Just, you know, the connection that I see from here is that Michael has built up an aversion to anyone having a goal for him. And it sounds like you're very careful about, you know, impinging on his space. He's in your space, but you're careful about impinging on his space by making any kind of demand of him.
Right.
And it sounds like that's exactly what went on with your mother, and where I would suggest the work might be from what you say, and I can relate to it because I had a similar thing with my father, so I can identify with that one. And it was, you know, yeah, now that you acknowledge me, but I've got enough hostility built up that, you know, it's too late. Don't even bother. Like, I'm not home for it.
Wow, that's interesting because I never felt hostile, but I felt afraid. I would get paralyzed when my mother approached me for a heart-to-heart talk, which only happened a couple of times. I felt as if my chest was like a pair of steel doors, and they went bam, they just shut.
Yeah. I wasn't straight aware into of sympathetic
hostility.
Dominance. Well, but you did say that by the time she came around to that, you would shut her out. That kind of sounds like an hostile act.
God, it didn't feel like that. I'll look at that too. It just felt afraid, like terrified. Can't show her this. It's not true.
So what do you suppose Michael's terrified to show? You know, when I think about what he's had to say when he's been on the show, and he leads it with that statement of, you don't understand how bad it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the terror of opening the doors to the assaults and the pain that he experienced is more than he may ever be ready to handle.
It might
be. And it sounds like as a teenager, it was sort of the same. There was so much water under the bridge that was just too traumatic to look at. And maybe he's the invitation to, you know, your next level of healing, your next level of looking at that fear.
Yeah, I can feel that.
Where do you feel it physically?
Oh, right in my heart. It just hurts in there.
Hmm. So it's time to forgive all of that hurt.
Yeah. Wonder what I'm so afraid of.
Well, it sounded like Mom wasn't very kind in those early years. Either physically or emotionally.
Was
So I have a suggestion.
Okay.
And that would be that perhaps you share with Michael that one of the things that, one of the blessings you've gotten from him being there is that you've gotten in touch with this fear. And perhaps invite him, ask him if he'd be willing, you know, seeing as how watching his sensitivity has awakened and aroused, touched into a sensitivity that you have, that you're ready to work through, and maybe he'd just hold space for you while you go through a worksheet.
You
and that might be a way for him. Literally, yeah, maybe you ask him, you know, this, I'm realizing, Michael, that this is something you've opened in me, and so I'm just seeing as how you've opened it. One of the principles I've learned is that the person who opens something for you has usually got the capacity to hold the space for the healing, and so I'm wanting to do some work in this regard, and I'm wondering if you'd just be the space. And that might have the dual benefit of taking it into realism on another level, seeing as how that's what you're seeing in him. And it may have the benefit of introducing to him just how easy forgiveness can be and how it's done. And it might be a vehicle for him opening a new level of his pain and being able to, you know, walk through his later years without carrying that. You know, when I think back to the time or two that he called into the show, I think it was terror.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. You know, he has this blind little dog, and he carries the dog around with him everywhere. And the dog is his excuse for why he can't get a job, because he'd have to have the dog with him. He can't leave the dog for a few hours, so forth. But I listen to him when I'm not around. I mean, he's in the basement, but he's right at the bottom of the stairs, and he's saying, it's okay, it's okay. You're all right, you're all right. And it's as if he's talking to himself.
Yeah. Well, that may be exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's,
he's so tender with this dog.
He's found
so hard on himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like he's found a companion that allows him to give himself some solace. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think Janie shared a little bit about this. I don't know if you were on the show the other day, but Arya has this character called... what's his name? It's got a name for it, a little character. Then it's just her hand.
Sean.
It's like she uses her hand. Sean, like a hand puppet. And this is Sean. And the other day we had bought a little toy basketball set that attaches to the wall of the shower. And, you know, she can play basketball while she's having a bath. So Sean picks up the ball and throws it to the basket and misses. And she literally spent about 5 minutes consoling Sean and telling him how it was okay and it was going to be okay and it was safe for him to try again. And it was interesting. She used the word, Sean,
God,
you just
gorgeous.
Have to you just have to persevere. She said to Sean. Yeah, and so she's got, and like literally when she missed, you know, there's a little soap dispenser and here's the basket at the end of the tub and he misses. And so he's the puppet on the end of her hand. So she takes her hand and puts it behind the soap dish. And you know, like he's hiding. It's like, it's okay, Sean, you can come out. You missed, but it's all right. You'll be okay. It's safe. Come on.
So cool.
I mean, she literally spent about 5 minutes and it sounds like perhaps Michael has opened a space where he can have a consoling conversation with himself, and that's awesome. I mean, that's a wonderful projection to, you know, to take care of someone like that. That's, you know, the man who actually got an honorary doctorate for the fact that he, I forget what his disease was, but he had been threatened. He was given a life sentence. You know, he's going to die from this disease. And instead of going to the hospital, he went and rented Laurel Harvey movies, Hardy movies, and went to a hotel and just laughed himself into hell. And he said,
oh, yeah.
You know, if he were to give somebody, Norman Cousins, if he were to give somebody a gift, it would be the gift of a life-threatening disease, and they'd have to take care of themselves. And so it sounds like he's found a way to project some of that, and that, and that's perhaps a powerful way for him to cope.
Yeah, that's true. Gosh, it's so
interesting. He'll be at the refugee center, and the dog is there in a covered baby carriage. And one time, a little kid, thinking it was a baby in there, one of the refugee children came into the kitchen and poked his head into the carriage, and the dog barked. And the baby, it was a toddler, went running off screaming.
Right.
And Michael grabbed the dog and hugged the dog to his chest and raced out of the refugee center and left the building, left all his stuff there. It was so dramatic. And then he came back and he said, I just couldn't take it. I just couldn't take how they treated the dog. He's feeling treated like that himself. And he has said to me more than once, I don't like people. People aren't nice. Animals, I prefer animals. And the other day I said, I hope you don't feel that way about Tim and me. And he didn't answer. Instead, he said, if you want me to leave, I'll leave. That was his answer.
Yeah.
So it's hard to find my way
burden.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a huge burden. What a load. I certainly join you in holding him in a blessing. And again, maybe sharing with him that one of the things that came up is, pardon me, seeing his sensitivity is a major aware of sensitivity in yourself, and invite him to support you. And it may be a way for him to work through some of that in himself.
I
might
love
be a
that
nice
idea,
gift.
But Michael, I'm thinking about what that worksheet, I need a little guidance. Like you said, ask for his help to get in touch with my fear.
Well,
if I have
what I'm suggesting is maybe he just support you through doing a worksheet. Maybe take one of the children's worksheets, one of the very early simple ones.
Okay.
And just go through the steps of it and just ask if he'll hold the space. You know, it's like this has brought some real tenders, some pain and some fear up for me. And would you be the light? Would you hold love present for me? Explain that to him and just go through the simple four or five steps of the children's worksheet and introduce him to what you're doing in a way that's non-threatening. It might give him a way to start to comprehend how he might let go of what he's carrying.
I understand
so that you would just
that.
Fill in the sheet while he's sitting there.
Yeah, I understand that, but what would my goal be? What would I do the sheet on? I'm sorry I'm being like an ignoramus, but I don't know how to even start.
No, it's not. Well, that's perfectly good, valid question. So it might be, you know, one of the things I've gotten in touch with was, you know, when I was a teenager and my mother came to me, you know, just thinking about what's going on for you, Michael, has brought up me looking at my relationship with my mom and how, when she came to me, I had such fear that I pushed her away. So that might be your worksheet. So the object of attention would be mom. And I'm, you know, so afraid, my fear. What's the thought? I have to push her away or I'm going to be hurt. What's the goal? Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted her to embrace me lovingly as a child. I'm going to cancel that goal and let what comes up come up. And so just go through those steps. And that may give him a framework to start to look at some of the goals that he's held for his former wife, some of the things that he projects on his dog.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks. I can
we had a,
that.
You know, we had another event with Aria, and one day, one of the things, you know, she used to take a nap, but she doesn't nap anymore. She comes home from school, and she's here, and she's awake, and we suggest that. It's like, no, I'm not awake. And so this one day, she was almost physically nodding as she's sitting on the couch playing with some of her toys. And so, well, why don't you just lay down and rest, take a nap? Well, I'm not tired. I'm not, your head comes, I'm not tired. But on the way out to the car to take her home, she's got a little doll bed, and she wants to take it with her. It's like, well, no, we leave that here. We don't take that home because it won't come back here to Nini's house. Oh, I'll just take it in the car. It's like, okay, so we'll take it in the car. So she's got a little blanket and this little bed out to the car and in her car seat. And she's got Sean, you know, this puppet character on the end of her hand. And he's usually mischievous. And we're in the car. And so Arya starts to talk to Jeannie and I. She says, well, now, Sean is really tired, and I brought his bed, and he's going to lay down, and I'm going to put the blanket on him. He's going to rest, so you have to be quiet.
I love it.
It was just total projection on this little hand puppet on the end of her hand. You know, she gets in the car. One time she looks at her hand, and you know, she's got this little puppet thing going. She says, Sean, what are you doing here? I thought I left you home. You know? but literally she's telling us to be quiet because Sean wants to rest. And she was so tired she could hardly keep her eyes open. So, you know, the projection that we do, and so giving him a mechanism of just seeing that, oh, it's possible. One of the things over the years that I've come to realize, at least for me, is that one of the reasons why people throw the tools away is they're in a mindset where I have tried absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's their belief. And they have, in their minds, tried everything. They've never tried what works, so they come to the conclusion that nothing could possibly work.
Right.
And so oftentimes people don't even try it because they've already come to that conclusion. And if you can demonstrate to them that there is something that works, then an opening occurs and things can change. And oftentimes just a demonstration of how it works can be all it takes.
You know, I'm afraid to do it. I have to do something about the fear of doing it even. Yeah. Okay.
Well, it sounds like he's put out a warning to you. Don't have any goals for me. Don't frame goals for me. I think that sounds like to me his major sensitivity is don't have goals for me. Don't expect anything from me. And then I won't disappoint you.
Yeah.
And so when you ask him a question like the one you asked, he doesn't answer the question because there's that, it sounds like, you know, I've been kicked out of so many lives that I don't want to get in a situation where somebody has a goal for me and I can't fulfill it and I get kicked out again. So instead of answering, he says, well, if you want me to leave, because that's what he's got hooked up to, anybody having a goal for him. That would just be my assessment of it.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm having to look at so many things that I was taught. Like, for instance, my mom would say, you never impose on anyone. And if you do, you make it up to them double. If somebody gives you something, you give them twice as much. And you really don't inconvenience anybody. And I'm thinking, here's this man who is, my mom would say, he's mooching. He's freeloading. And he is on one level. And so I'm saying, wow, you know. And I said to Tim, were you taught those things? And Tim says, no, I never heard that kind of thing when I was a kid. And so he doesn't have that in his mind. So I'm getting
in
to look
store.
At a lot of, a lot of junk that I don't want to have.
Isn't it nice how the universe is set up, custom designed to show each of us exactly what we're holding on to? And if we'll get out of the one world religion of blame, it's somebody else's fault, and own it, we can go, oh, that's something else in me that I can look at. That's something else that really doesn't serve me that I need to forgive.
Right. That is so true.
It's like the whole game is designed to show us exactly what we're holding on to.
And it's so funny because Michael's being here suits Tim for things he would like to have taken care of. And so God gives us this man who shows me my stuff and helps Tim, you know, feel comfortable because he doesn't have to do certain things. How could that be? It seems like the most amazingly subtle little arrangement here.
The awesome law of resonance.
Oh, so amazing.
And, you know, in our healing through relationships, we call it relationships based in matching bags of garbage, which equates to relationships where each person involved gets the opportunity to heal what they don't need to be carrying anymore. And, you know, it's like the whole energy system through resonance is set up to be able to show us in spades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we don't look the first time, then the 2x4 comes a little harder and a little harder and a little harder until we finally go, oh, here it is.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I need to be dealing with. So it's perfect. It's awesome.
Oh, boy, it is. Well,
so holding the space. Go for it.
Do you have somebody else? Well,
good.
You know,
go for it.
Okay. I have a friend of mine in the choir who told us the other day that she couldn't find her iPhone. And, you know, I sent up a little flare to St. Anthony, which is an old residual, something I learned from my childhood best friend who was a Roman Catholic. And St. Anthony has delivered a lot of lost things to me over the years. And so, anyway, several days have passed, and she still hasn't found the phone. Meanwhile, what am I doing? I'm looking at how addicted I am to my iPhone and how disturbed I would be if I lost it. And so that isn't to say I need a whole long discussion about this, but the invention of the iPhone has changed my life so much. And it is also an escape doodad. For instance, if I'm at all uncomfortable or bored, which is a kind of uncomfortable.
Pick up your phone.
I pick up my phone and I look at Facebook and I read my email and it helps me procrastinate. I'm just
having
a look at that.
It's an easy addiction. Remember in the codependence workshop, we defined addiction as a compulsive use of any person, place, circumstance, activity, or substance in order to not feel and deal with what's going on inside of us, or in order to avoid or dissociate from our highest guidance. And anything
I
do,
agree with that.
Anything.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. So I have tried putting the phone away for a while. I don't do very well. I have a friend who gives up the phone for a whole day on Sundays. She just goes on a phone fast and shuts it off.
Right.
I haven't been willing to do that. I shouldn't say I'm not able, because I really am able to do it, but I don't do it. And I don't know what
Well, why don't you do it and just have some worksheets? Why don't you do it and just have some worksheets there and watch what comes up? Just watch your mind and what comes up for you.
You know what I want to say is I don't want to, Michael. I don't want to do it.
Yeah,
I
understand. Well, notice you have a couple of grandsons. You've been suggesting they give something up, and what do they say?
Yeah, I know. That's true.
So maybe your willingness would open the path in the genes. I love it. I love it. By
well,
the way, on the
sugar.
Subject.
What?
Yeah, by the way, on the subject of her not being able to find her iPhone, usually there's a connection. I know on my phone, you can go to that. You can put in a track on the phone, and it will show you where it is, even if it's turned off. I don't know if she's thought of that.
Well, she says the battery is dead. Does it,
yeah,
it happen with the battery dead?
I think, you know, the battery's dead, but, you know, there's usually enough reserve power to keep that signal going, at least for a certain time period. So, anyway, it might be a last resort for her.
That
was
so helpful.
You know,
I have something
see
on
that
mine
it's under the bed
find
or something.
My phone. I have something on mine called Find My Phone.
Right.
And I lost my phone twice in the park. And you can tell it from a distance to beep, and it shows you on a Google map where it
right.
is. And I have found
so she
my
may
phone
have that.
In. She doesn't have
she
it on
have...
her phone.
Oh.
If it isn't on your phone already.
Well, there's an app you can do that, but I think that most phones have something like that built in. Anyway, it might be worth letting her know about that.
Yeah.
She can check and see, you know. I don't know the mechanics of how to do it, but.
Right. Okay,
expensive
and Michael,
little item to lose.
Oh, my God, yes. So I'll save my other stuff for another time and let you carry on. Because, you know, I can
well,
go
I'm,
on
we're
forever.
Carrying on. Here you are. Go for it.
Okay, well, this is really tricky, and I'm not even sure I should bring it up.
Well, then, let's press. Sounds like a good one to bring up.
Okay. One of my very best friends up north is married to a man who has been writing me letters saying that I am a good friend, and we are friends, but the initial friendship is with the female friend, my girlfriend,
right,
or whatever you call it.
Right.
But he says that he really needs somebody to talk to. And it turns out what he wants to talk about is sex, his frustrations with her, his preoccupation with pornography, his frustrations overall with the things that go on in his head. And I've said, I'm not really that comfortable with this. I want to be a friend, but can you speak to a therapist about this? Oh, you know, he has his reasons. And so for a while, it'll go on a kind of silent thing, because he just really wants to talk to me about how badly he feels. How I've asked for the word. I say, what is it? Are you frustrated? Are you mad? Do you want somebody to give you permission to have these thoughts and think this way? What do you need? And he said, I guess I'm annoyed that my life isn't the way I want it. Well, I've long since suggested wake-up sheets. And he was, when we lived in New Haven, he came to me as a client for a couple of sessions.
Brian,
I didn't know about this, but the resistance was massive. And I said, I don't think we should start working. You're a friend, and this isn't the kind of thing you need, because you're resistant to it. And you'll find your way, but what I'm suggesting isn't helpful to you, so why don't we stop working? I kind of fired him very gently.
Right,
but the
right.
Same thing is going on, and I have asked him, what do you get out of speaking to me? And he finally admitted that in a certain way, it's titillating. And I said, this isn't good. I don't want to be an enabler. I wonder if you'd consider going to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, which is a great AA group. He said, no,
right.
No. So anyway, what I'm running up against is, I guess I'm running up against the conviction. I think it's the conviction that I have to say, I can't do this. I don't want to do this anymore. And yet I want to stay friends. I don't want to lose you as a friend, but this isn't acceptable. I guess
I mean, if you're not comfortable doing that, I'd say a worksheet or two around it, but it sounds like just total clarity. It's like, so you are, I'd just be real clear up front. You know, my perception is you're a sex addict and you want me to enable that, and I just don't want to do it. So we're not going to have conversations in that arena anymore. I would like to remain connected with you and be a friend, but that's just not, I'm not going to do that. And,
okay.
You know, it's time for you to do, to hold him accountable, or it's time for him to be accountable to himself for what he's doing. And it sounds like he's using you.
You know, at first it was flattering. I'm 78 years old. I mean, for any reason, somebody thinks I'm, you know, could talk to me that way. I think, holy mackerel, there's a little interest there. And then I think, good grief, it gives me the squirmies. And so, and I feel unfaithful to my friend. He's telling me things about their relationship that, you know, she'd be perfectly happy to tell me, and has in some ways. But it's just icky.
Yeah.
So,
thank you. It sounds like just time for clear communication.
I think my fear is that I'm going to hurt his feelings. And I don't want to hurt his feelings, but I guess I'm going to.
Yeah. Well, anybody, here's my input. You can't possibly hurt his feelings, but he's got feelings of hurt that he's covering with sex as his addiction. And you stop being the outlet for that, he's going to have to turn to somebody else, or he's going to feel his hurt. But you're not going to be hurting him. He's going to experience the hurt that he's covering up with this addictive behavior. You know, it's titillating.
Yeah, okay.
So I can create a false chemistry in my brain. And, you know, how long has he been a sex addict? You know, chances are it's been all his life. And he's not a young man, so he's not going to be too willing to give it up. And there's probably going to be a whole lot of upset underneath it. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
you might explain to him, and, you know, if you're upset, that's great. Now you're in touch with your hurt. You need to start the deal, buddy. And maybe even invite him to come to your Wednesday morning class. You're just not going to facilitate this using you as a space for him to play his addiction out.
That's very helpful. He wouldn't come to the class, partly just because he's got a full-time job during that time.
Yeah.
But thanks. I feel as if I've gotten the clarity and the support to say that to him.
Maybe I'd be real clear that, you know, that you just, you know, you're really clear what enabling is, and you're seeing that that's what you're doing, and that you don't want to play that role in his life. It's not fair to him. It's not fair to you.
Right.
And he's going to go,
Oh,
it's okay. No problem with me being fair. It's like, you're playing your addiction. Of course, you're not feeling what's going on, but this is out of integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the fact is. Go ahead.
He is a frustrated artist, and I've more than once said to him, "This is somehow connected with your creativity in my mind, but it needs rechanneling in some way." That's just a thought, and I think that's why I've kept up the conversations with him, because I don't want him to shut down his creativity, but that's bullshit. It is.
Well, that's a way not to confront the truth, but it sounds like you know what the truth is, and you might make the suggestion that, you know, go take an art class and start sublimating this, start to change the direction that you're going with this covering up creative urge with sex addiction.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very helpful.
Awesome. Appreciate the questions you bring and the willingness you have. And tell Michael we said hello and send our love.
I will. Thanks a lot. That's so nice. Yeah, I hope he can hear that. Right. I would have loved to have him stay on the show.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a whole lifetime of hurt there that, you know, if the door opens, it's going to pour out and it's going to be pretty messy. The healing crisis, you know, when I think about my conversations with him and what you shared and what he's been through, I mean, it sounds like he's been through hell and back.
Yeah.
And what's going to have to pour out, it's going to be pretty heavy duty. It's going to be a lot of tears.
Yeah. Yep, and they do leak out every once in a while. You know, he cries easily, but it's just, he always says, oh, it's just my anxiety. Just my anxiety. I'm very anxious today.
Yeah, it's his unresolved trauma, and how long is that trauma going on? I was reading some research just real quick because we're just about finished, but the other day, and you know, there's a research study done on trauma with children, and they identified 8 different types of trauma. And they came up with a figure like something like 60% of people in America as children had one or more of these 8 different types of trauma in their lives as small kids. You know, and when
surprised.
They carry out through a whole lifetime, it's just horrific. It's.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
And literally in early childhood, these traumas deform the brain. And if people don't access the right technology and tools, the brain never recovers. It can, with the flexibility that's got and the ability to regenerate, it can repair itself, but it takes really doing one's work, and, you know, it's tough to face.
Yeah. Well, Michael hasn't even begun to tell me about his childhood, but we're going backwards increment by increment. Now he told me about his ex-wife and a brother and a sister, both who distanced themselves from him. One tried to become unreachable, changed his address and phone number, and then has died. And the other one, they haven't spoken in 40 years.
Wow.
There's got to be something
that's a load.
Huge there.
Yeah, that
sure is.
That's a hellish thing to carry around.
God.
But we'll hold the space for healing.
Thanks.
And thank him for the impetus he gives for you to look at the next level of what you've been carrying around. And vicariously, everybody who's engaged in the radio show gets to go, another piece of me for healing. So,
right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Jeannie.
All right, dear heart, you have a blessed one.
Thanks.
Okay, lots of love. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.